This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
So broadcasting was a term that we came to fairly early in our discussions, not just because of its technological underpinnings with regard to radio or television, but thinking of it with regard to agriculture. So broadcasting has its roots in this idea of planting seeds, disseminating them widely, seeing how they grow. So this kind of idea of a kind of rhizomatic schema of collaboration was something that we were very interested in. So the exhibition, while it has a kind of a gallery home over at ICA, it also has partnerships with Slot, with Scribe, with Lightbox, with PhillyCam. The exhibition itself is both a screening program and an exhibition space, but it's also an active television studio. So two times during the run of the show over at ICA, we're actually turning the exhibition space into a kind of a live talk show space. So we had one a couple weeks ago between the artists Tony Cokes and Antoine Catala. And then at the end of March, we're going to be doing a talk show with Sandra Perry and Ulysses Jenkins. So there's this intergenerational aspect to the project, which was very important to us. We're going to also be doing a program at PhillyCam in conjunction with the Oscars and TVTV, which is the work that's over here on this far wall. We're going to be looking at TVTV's Live at the Oscars. And then on February 28th, Lightbox is going to be doing a variety show special influenced by Ernie Kovacs, an artist who found inspiration in his kind of performative television episodes. So also, I should mention that if you are hanging out later tonight, we have an event going on at ICA until 10 o'clock tonight. It's one of our gathers, and it's celebrating the work of Audre Lorde, so it should be really fantastic, and that will go on long after this opening. So if you're looking for another kind of dry place to congregate, that would be a good place to go. So again, this idea of kind of broadcast liveness, temporality. I know we are in a kind of an on-demand streaming culture, but liveness hasn't totally disappeared. It still permeates media experience. We can think about Instagram stories, Facebook Live, but also there are still these kind of, media events on television. We can think about the Olympics that are happening right now that have their own kind of political narrative that is playing out in front of our eyes. We can think about the kind of, the political commentary or soft commentary that happens on things like Saturday Night Live, or the kind of, the role that award ceremonies are taking place right now with regard to representation with race and gender. It also resonates with the discussions that we have about net neutrality, about who owns the media, who controls our sources of information, and how we get them. So, Guerrilla Media, the title, so this iteration of the exhibition, Guerrilla Media, is really riffing off of Michael Schamburg and the Rain Dance Corporation's 1971 tome, Guerrilla Television. The phrase Guerrilla Television was somewhat lifted from Abby Hoffman, the Yippies' Steal This Book. There was a chapter in it where he talks about Guerrilla Television and about taking over broadcast stations and literally just, having these kind of political interventions. For Rain Dance Corporation, they were thinking more along the lines of disseminating the tools of production to a mass audience, about taking back media away from a mainstream kind of broadcast narrative. What would it mean for us to have the tools of production in our own hands? Michael Schamburg himself has an interesting trajectory. You might know him now as a Hollywood producer. He produced The Big Chill, Pulp Fiction, Aaron Brockovich, so these kind of big Hollywood productions. But he got his start in these kind of radical media collectives. So initially with Rain Dance, which was finding inspiration in the kind of media ecologies of Marshall McLuhan and Buckminster Fuller, and then eventually would go on to form TVTV, which stands for Top Value Television, alongside members of like Ant Farm. Later on, TVTV would also come to have members like Bill Murray, Lily Tomlin, so it would take this kind of more kind of fictional, humoristic approach. But Guerrilla Television, they talk about this idea of Media America, that we're kind of maybe held hostage by broadcast television. The critic David Joslett talks about this idea of mainstream broadcast television being a place where democracy can't take place because it eliminates a kind of a sense of collectivity. And so they were really interested in how would we disrupt this? How would we break apart mainstream media, have these interventions where maybe everyday people have the media in their own hands and can represent themselves? And David Joslett talks about this with regard to things like feedback. So this idea of feedback being a place of not just kind of looping communication, but also of disruption, which we can kind of see with kind of activist strategies. But Raindance wasn't the only group that was thinking along these lines. We can think about this moment, you know, in the early 70s, late 60s, with regard to things like the Whole Earth catalog, which is also a kind of manual for tools kind of a catalog for dispersing these tools. We can also think about a group like Ant Farm, which was contemporaneous. The actual tools of production themselves. So 1967 is when the Sony Portapak was introduced. So, you know, we're all used to having these little things in our hands, but, you know, up until the late 60s, it wasn't just easy for anyone to go out and, you know, film what was around them. So when Sony introduced this device, which was actually still cumbersome and quite heavy, even though it looks like a small little thing, it wasn't as accessible as it looks like it might have been. But it really did break down a lot of the boundaries for people to be able to go out and intervene in media. So TVTV, actually, they were formed in 1972 to make another kind of narrative of the Republican and Democratic presidential kind of conventions. And so they ended up telling a different kind of documentary strategy with it, because using the Portapak, even though it was still kind of cumbersome, was still much lighter weight than the big television cameras that the kind of proper studios were using. So they could get different perspectives, they could show the whole scene, they could also show the infrastructure of media production. So with the Portapak, a lot of artists were able to finally also beginning to kind of make their own videos. And so at this moment, so this is also from Raindance. They had a magazine called Radical Software. So a lot of what's happening in Radical Software and also in Guerrilla Television is that they're showing you actually also like how to use these tools. It's not just about what you're going to do with them, but how you have access to these things, what networks you might find. And it's out of this moment that EAI was founded. So Electronic Arts Intermix also begins in 1971 by a man named Howard Wise, who mounts the first ever video art exhibition. And it's also at this moment that Michael Schamburg is actually introduced to his colleagues who he founds Raindance with. So there's also this really nice synergy between the birth of this kind of media critique and then also Electronic Arts Intermix, which is founded to give a platform for this new medium called video art, which was obviously, if you think about the Portapak when it was produced and then when EAI is founded, it's very early on in its the medium's history. So Howard Wise has an exhibition called TV as a Creative Medium, and out of this, EAI is formed. So EAI is known as an archive. They're also a distribution service. A primary thing that EAI does is they get compensation for artists, which is no small thing when it comes to something like media art. But it's also one of the things that is not as well recognized for as a production space. So a lot of artists have made work with the help of EAI. As you're watching some of these videos, sometimes in the credits you're going to actually see produced at Electronic Arts Intermix, which is very interesting. Sometimes you'll see some of the artists that are featured in the show working on other artists' videos because they might have been employed by EAI and helping them to produce their work. EAI is also an educational streaming service now, which is something that Aaron has been working with the library to try to tap into that resource to make Electronic Arts Intermix's amazing catalog available to students. So that's also something that they're working on now that we're in the digital era. So how do you get artists I guess, compensated when things are now online, on YouTube, et cetera. One of the things that I was very interested in, specifically, especially considering the ICA context, is thinking about EAI as a place of intergenerational conversation. And that's one of the things that we're doing programmatically through the exhibition. Is trying to also think about artists who you might not think of within a video art lineage. So younger artists like Sandra Perry or Josh Klein, who might be kind of considered quote-unquote post-internet, but who are really influenced by this earlier generation of activist strategy, participatory media of the 70s. I'm going to give you a very brief rundown of the exhibition. And it's not an exhaustive narrative because, for various reasons, but we are really we're thinking about different moments within EAI's catalog that we could use to kind of look at different positional strategies. We could have easily, this exhibition could have been about, you know, 30 times bigger, but for, you know, various constraints, there's a selection of 10 works, which is pretty fantastic. So the three rooms have loose thematics to them. So the front room has a kind of maybe more, is the more contemporary work, it's a more kind of pop cultural appropriation intervention. This room is more kind of revolving around different documentary strategies and putting the media into kind of everyday hands. And then in the media lounge, there's a screening program, two different works, and it's revolving much more about kind of performativity. So the earliest work in the exhibition actually picks up directly after this kind of 1971 moment, 1972-73. It's a work by Video Venice News, whose founding member, Ulysses Jenkins, is one of the artists that we're really focused on in the other exhibition over at ICA. It's called Remnants of the Watts Festival. So 1971 is also interesting because it's also the moment that Melvin Van Peebles makes Sweet, Sweet Badass, Sweet Sweet Back's Badass Song. And it's also this like moment when people are starting to think really critically about media representation. David Joslitz talked about it as this idea of a media apartheid. So thinking about not only who is seen, but who has the means of production to create representation. So there were also a lot of conversations at this time about the Black Panthers maybe having their own television channel, like what could cable access do, what other kinds of channels of distribution could we create? So Ulysses Jenkins, who up until this time was actually a painter and a muralist, picks up a camera and is inspired to document the Watts Summer Festival. And it was in the kind of the wake of the uprising in 1966, and there was a feeling that the mass media wasn't going to portray it in a positive light. So the only way to kind of take back a kind of a positive notion of this festival and to kind of think about the community from within the community was to pick up the camera yourself. So as you can see here, he says in the very beginning, as in the introduction, he says, "Back in the days when the myth of public access was being preached, I put down my paintbrushes and grabbed a port-a-pack and went to visit one of the greatest Afro-American events in the history of the United States." So it's that idea of picking up the port-a-pack. So that narrative that I was kind of painting in the beginning isn't this kind of overly simplistic thing. It actually was a real game changer for people and how they were able to represent themselves in many different aspects. The work back there on the left is by, it's an overview of a group called DCTV, Downtown Community Television Center, which was founded by John Alpert, Yoko Murayama, and Keiko Tsuno. And they were located in Chinatown in Manhattan. And this is, it's actually a survey of their works that was produced for New York Public Television on WNET. And it's a series of interviews with the founders of DCTV about how they came to found their collective and also some excerpts of some of their works. And one of the things that propelled them to want to start DCTV was thinking about about also how there was the festivals, that the only time that the news cameras would come to Chinatown were for these kind of elaborate, colorful festivals, and then they would leave. And they said, well, you're not actually showing the people, you're not actually showing the people in our community how, you know, how can we change the narrative of the kind of everyday life on the street? So they started this media center, and they would do things like they would go to community centers, and they would show people themselves being recorded as they were recording them, so that people wouldn't be afraid of having their image taken from them, because they could actually see how they were being represented, which was a huge thing. So they'd actually have monitors in the room with them as they were filming them. And then they were some of the first people to document things that were happening within the community. They say, for example, that it's the first instance of acupuncture actually being filmed in the U.S. So things that were happening kind of behind closed doors that you know, maybe the mainstream media wasn't interested in, that people from within the community wanted to see representations of. So TVTV I talked quite a bit about, but I'll just mention that we have two out of the four parts of Gerald Ford's America. We have Chic to Shake and Win. And this is really right before TVTV goes down this kind of more fictional kind of route with the kind of celebrity names that you might be familiar with. But this is where they're using this kind of kind of guerrilla documentary kind of strategies. And you can see sometimes they're using this kind of fisheye lens exaggeration. But they're following other narratives. So for example, they follow like the party planner, and they show how Washington is really revolving around these social gatherings, and that this is where a lot of the money is being generated. So there's this kind of meta critique through these kind of everyday trails that they're following. We also have another work that they're streaming online, and again, we'll be showing a work at PhillyCam in relation to the Oscars. So jumping forward to 1978 to 81, we have Squat Theater, which was an experimental theater group based down in the East Village, and they would perform in their shop window. So Andy Warhol's Lost Love imagines the moment when Ulrike Meinhof from the Bader Meinhof group might have met Andy Warhol. So it's a kind of an hour performative surreal piece that kind of follows Andy Warhol down the on a horse through kind of the kind of Wall Street district, and then ends in this kind of like experimental theatrical production. And then at night we're going to be kind of mirroring this idea of Squat Theater taking place in a window display, and it's going to be shown at night in the window, and you'll be able to hear it from the street. Martha Rosler's is known obviously as for her own independent work, but she also produced a work with Paper Tiger Television, very important television collective. And in this work, she's critiquing kind of gender and class in the story of kind of Baby M, and it's a really hilarious but also really biting critique, and that'll be showing in the Media Lounge. The Media Lounge, I should mention, is also it's very hard when you're dealing with time-based, you know, work with sound, how to get all the levels right. I'm sure some of you noticed, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes the sound bleed. So we wanted to have a space too where the works would be timed on a screening program. So you can come back, I think, at 1 and 3 and 2 and 4. We have a schedule posted. And of course, if you come on a day when it's not the opening and you want to hear something in more depth, and I'm sure Aaron will be happy to kind of change sound levels for you and stuff. So please know that this is all something that we were considering, and it's something that we care deeply about, because all of these artists, it's important that their work be kind of heard and seen in the best possible condition. So, for example, Martha Rosler felt really strongly about having the sound kind of out in the open, so we worked with her to have the work in the Media Lounge. So Robert Beck, there's a lot of also kind of resonances with the present. So Robert Beck's Diva TV, Robert Beck is another artist who is over in the ICA exhibition with his cable access interventions. Robert Beck worked at EAI. You'll see his name in the credits on the Express piece, for example. This is a work called The Feeling of Power that he produced with Diva TV, which was a collective, a media collective associated with ACT UP. And in addition to the kind of these amazing kind of Bob Saget, you know, America's Home Video pieces, pick up a camera. There's also an ACT UP demonstration in front of Trump Tower. So you have your kind of King of Horror, you know, placard there. So there's it's uncanny in a very uncomfortable way. So again, just to kind of reiterate that EAI isn't just a distribution service, but also a place of production. So at the very end of this piece, he says, you know, studio editing and post-production, Electronic Arts intermix. And then we have X-Prez's No Sellout, or I Want to Be the Ultimate Commodity Machine, Malcolm X Part 2. So kind of almost reverberating back to the earlier part of this exhibition with Ulysses Jenkins and thinking about representations in media. So here, Tony Coakes, who's a member of X-Prez, who's also is one of the artists that's spotlit in the exhibition at ICA, is thinking critically about the way that the image of Malcolm X is both a powerful political symbol, but has also been commodified, and this critique of that. And we couldn't help but think about the MLK car commercial controversy with the Super Bowl. So there's also some interesting resonances with how kind of commodification of radical signifiers is operating. And then finally, 2005's Radical Software Group's RSG Black One, which is the last work in the exhibition in terms of the present. And it's a work where they have extracted all of the images of people of color to show how biased Hollywood cinema is, to show you the way that people of color are depicted in a Hollywood film. So it is a pretty intense piece. But it also shows its technology on its sleeve, so the resolution is, you'll see in many of these works, is not the kind of the crisp high definition that we maybe have come to expect. And just to kind of then revert, you know, kind of circle back fully, so Radical Software Group, which one of its members is Alex Galloway, who's written a lot on gaming strategies with regard to kind of, I guess, thinking about kind of Brechtian interventions in the present. Obviously, their name is looking back to Rain Dance Corporation. It's looking back to the journal Radical Software. So thinking also about software here in like that in the early 70s moment, a kind of cybernetics in tandem with thinking about broadcast media. So, you know, if 2005, which is Radical Software Group's piece in the other room, is made in 2005. That's also the moment right when YouTube is starting. It's before we all have our iPhones. So there's this moment of a kind of a cutoff that we're also self-consciously thinking about in this exhibition. And there's a hope that, you know, students, that groups will be coming here, finding maybe strategies within this exhibition to maybe think about how that connects to the things that we're thinking about now with regard to, you know, think about Facebook Live, think about the way that, you know, police brutality has been documented and been released into mainstream media sources and that might not have been otherwise done, things like that. So how do we think about, Michael Shamberg has this great line where he talks about anytime there's a shift in dominant communications, there's a radical shift in culture. So to think about how these interventions might also be a platform to think about present-day technologies. So how to move from being a media consumer to being a media producer. So we just wanted to one of the short clips of Michael Shamberg's media primers from Rain Dance Corporation. And the goal of these media primers, which were also produced in 1971, was to talk to people out on the street and ask them how they would feel about being on the news. What would it mean if you were news? Which was a radical proposition. He's also going to be showing the Porta Pack, thinking about, you know, again, these are the tools that are at your disposal. So I like to think of this exhibition as a kind of, you know, meta media primer in a sense, to think about what would it mean for a space to be a media primer. So that's also one of the reasons for thinking about highlighting this short clip. So thank you very much.